SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Monday, the 2nd of February 2026, a day where the Australian share market tumbled, the S&P ASX 200 down 1%. We'll have the details with Raymond Chan from Morgans in a few moments. One of the reasons for that is because of the gold and silver price, which fell pretty hard off the back of the announcement of the new Federal Reserve Chairman in the United States. And while that relates to interest rates there, tomorrow we've got interest rates decisions here. Phil O'Donoghue from Deutsche Bank will preview that in a moment. But first to property, and there may be an affordability squeeze and renewed cost of living pressures, but that hasn't stopped home values from rising. Property researchers at Cotality say the median national price hit a record of $912,465 in January. That is up 0.8%, and it comes ahead of the Reserve Bank meeting on interest rates tomorrow, where the market is tipping a 72% chance of an interest rate rise. To tell us more about the property results and where to next for property prices, I spoke with Tim Lawless, the head of research at Cotality. Tim, first of all, how would you describe the pace of growth in property prices last month?
I think in a phrase, Ricardo, it's still really strong, but slowing down. We saw a national value increase of 0.8% in January. That was actually a little bit of a step up from December, where values were up 0.6%. But compared to, say, October last year, when the market was rising at about 1.2% month on month, clearly a little bit of momentum's coming out of the market. And not too surprisingly either, given there's a bit of dent to confidence, there's an expectation that interest rates are going to rise, and there's other just organic or natural factors like affordability and serviceability challenges that are just getting worse and worse.
And with all those challenges, this increase, right, is it across the board or is it in specific cities?
Well, it is across the board. We're seeing values rising everywhere, but absolutely there is quite a bit of a rich tapestry here. We're still seeing the mid-sized capitals, Perth, Brisbane, Adelaide, all recording extraordinarily strong conditions, but growth slowing down in those markets as well. For example, Perth housing values are up 2% just over the month alone. About January, in dollar terms, that means the market was up by nearly $19,000 on the median value in just 1 month. Whereas at the other end of the spectrum, you've got cities like Sydney and Melbourne that did record a subtle decline in December. They've just nudged back into some really modest level of month-to-month growth. Sydney was up 0.2%, Melbourne at 0.1%, so a bit better than flat. So definitely still seeing values rising across the board, but starting to see a lot more diversity. But the broad theme is here, even in those markets that are extraordinarily strong, there has been a slowdown in the rate of growth.
You touched on it earlier, the potential for an interest rate increase tomorrow. To what extent has that talk actually impacted prices, buying activity in January? And what about the latest auction results? Does that tell a story?
To be fair, it is pretty hard to gauge January housing conditions, given the fact that it is such a seasonal month. We really don't see the market sort of starting to fire up until the final week of January. So we did see auction clearance rates post a pretty solid bounce back on the first week of results that we saw. They came in just under 70%, so definitely not shooting the lights out, but it was a pretty strong recovery from the high 50s to low 60s we're seeing around the middle of December. I speculate this is probably vendors becoming a little bit more willing to meet the market rather than any sort of pickup in demand. And I think, there's widespread expectations that rates will probably rise through 2026. That's clearly a negative for housing markets. It means probably further dent to confidence and, of course, less borrowing capacity, more challenging serviceability constraints as well. And add to that the fact that we're seeing other demand-side factors like slowing population growth, affordability challenges have never been this stretched either. So it's hard to see housing values continuing to rise as quickly as they are But in the same sense, there's a lot of other things than just interest rates influencing the market. You've got really low supply levels. Listing numbers are still about 20% below normal for this time of the year as well. So that supply or that undersupply is still going to be a factor keeping a floor under prices, I think.
Okay. What about the rental market then? How's that looking and what's the outlook?
It's still really tight. We're still seeing vacancy rates well below the 2% mark. A long-term average for vacancies is getting around 3%. In January, the vacancy rate was 1.7% nationally. So there has been a bit of a subtle loosening in vacancy rates, which is good news for renters, but the market is still very tight. There's still a real shortage of rental stock available, and we have seen this rebound in annual rental growth up to, say, 5.4%. Over the past 12 months, that means a typical renter is spending about $42 more a week on their rent on our national numbers.
And so finally, and in wrapping up, what I got out of this is that while there is the potential for a rate rise, you're saying that prices will still increase for property, but perhaps at a slower pace. There's a floor on these price increases, right? So what's your advice to buyers, both owner-occupiers and investors, given this outlook for interest rates?
I think for any buyer, they should really be trying to time such an important high commitment financial decision as buying a home on their own timeframes rather than trying to time the market in line with, say, monetary policy or fiscal policy or first home buyer stimulus, that type of thing. But I think overall, we probably will find a bit of urgency comes out of the market over the coming months. We might start to see supply and demand getting a little bit better balanced. So prices are still rising, but not quite as quickly as they used to be, maybe a little bit more supply to choose from as well. So I think that's good news for buyers, is that they might have a little bit more to choose from and get a little bit of negotiation leverage back at the negotiation table.
That's Tim Lawless there from Cotality. Now, of course, he's mentioning there the markets are expecting an interest rate rise tomorrow, not everyone is expecting one, including Phil O'Donohoe from Deutsche Bank. We'll hear from him in a few moments. First, to the Australian share market, which fell, the S&P ASX 200 down 1% to 8,778 points. 8 of the 11 sectors on the index finished lower. Material smashed today, down by 3.1%, followed by energy and healthcare. Telcos, though, doing quite well. Unsurprisingly, the reason why materials fell was because of a huge fall in that gold and silver price. Gold down about 15% compared with this time on Friday. Silver, 30%. So as a result, we saw stocks like Newmont down 10% today, Emerald Resources off by 9%, Bellevue Gold 8% weaker too. The worst performer on the 200 today, that was GrainCorp shares down by 14% on the back of a profit warning. It's saying that it's seeing a bit of oversupply and lower prices around the world. The best performer on the market today, Nine Entertainment, shares up by 6.5% today, followed by Drone Shield and Whitehaven Coal. To take us through the market action, including the reaction to the new nomination by the Donald Trump for the Federal Reserve Chair, I spoke with Raymond Chan. He is the head of Retail Desk Asia at Morgans. Raymond, let's start with the US Federal Reserve. Donald Trump's pick as chair is Kevin Warsh. What's the reaction been like, and what's it likely to mean for US interest rates?
Donald Trump has nominated Kevin Warsh to take over from Jerome Powell as the head of US Federal Reserve. Our economist thinks Warsh could be the best Federal Reserve chair since Alan Greenspan. Warsh served on the Federal Reserve Board between 2006 and 2011 and disagreed with Ben Bernanke's heavy use of the quantitative easing, i.e. money printing. He feels it's risk-creating inflation. This suggests Warsh will be more hawkish than Powell and may disagree with Trump, who wants lower interest rate. But even so, for now, the market is still pricing in 1 to 2 more rate cuts from the Fed. The real question under Warsh is probably not so much about the direction of the interest rate, is whether he is as willing as previous Federal Reserve chairs to use quantitative easing during a downturn, given his preference for keeping the Federal Reserve balance sheets smaller.
So what's interesting now is the market reaction to that, because it came at the same time we saw this huge correction in the gold and silver prices. I think gold down by at least 10% since Friday, silver more than 30%. Was Warsh's appointment the catalyst? What else is behind it? And where to now for the price of these commodities?
Yeah, after an extremely strong and some would say speculative surge, gold has fallen over 15% from the peak of over $5,500 to around, you know, the $4,750. The pullback came, of course, after the Donald Trump nomination of Kevin Warsh as the next Federal Reserve chair, a choice market viewed as credible but clearly more hawkish. That shift has raised question about whether gold remarkable run is starting to lose steam, because the move between $2,500 US to all the way to $5,000 was driven mostly by investor demand rather than the central bank buying. Central bank has been steadily buying gold since 2011, but the annual purchase were held roughly steady, around $100 to $150 billion US over the past 2 years. So what really pushed the gold price higher recently was the investor demand on the back of rising geopolitical tension. But with Trump administration focused on secure a successful outcome out of the 2026 midterm election, there's a chance that we could see a resolution of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, or even a de-escalation with Iran. So, which would naturally cool off some of the fear-driven buying. So the market at the moment is looking for more volatility, and with gold price, you know, we don't normally see the move go up in a straight line. Investors should expect more volatility. While the long-term driver for gold remain in place, we need to stay alert, because the fading geopolitical tension as the U.S. head toward the November 2026 midterm election will likely to be a catalyst.
Okay. Speaking of the direction of interest rates, which we were talking about, the RBA's meeting tomorrow, what's the market pricing?
Well, last week, trimmed the mean inflation figures of 3.4% came in a touch higher than the market expectation, and they have enough to shift the market pricing. Now, the way I look at it is the market now expect the RBA to lift rates again this year, pushing the cash rate from currently 3.6% all the way to 4.1%. So that imply two rate hike. So we got a good chance, you know, despite it's not 100% chance, we got a good chance. We got a 25 basis point rate hike tomorrow, and maybe another one closer to September this year.
So everything we've just discussed today, how is it all impacting the share market?
Well, after Friday weakness in the U.S. market, a bought commodity sell-off and the RBA meeting looming tomorrow, we saw a local market sell-off accelerate in the afternoon. Resources, technology, REIT led the pullback, while the banks hold steady. Defensive like Telstra and Amcor seems to doing some support. Having said that, it's a broad-based sell-off. Not to mention on the company-specific news, we have Greencore coming up with a significant weaker than expected FY26 guidance downgrade that lead to a outsized stock price for today.
And finally, we've got reporting season coming up. What are you looking out for?
As we head into the February reporting season, we finally see a bit of sign of life, actually, for corporate earnings. So after about 2-3 years of we feel like the earnings not going anywhere, sometimes even going backward, the earnings picture looks a lot better in FY26 this financial year. Just to recap, back in FY25, our ASX 200 EPS growth was negative 1.2%. But for now, for FY26, this financial year, the market is looking for earning growth of 8 to 9%, initially led by the resources, but then the improvement is more broad-based, spreading to the like of healthcare and consumer staple. So the more widespread of the earning improvement is a welcoming sign for the Australian market. So, but one thing I guess investors need to be very mindful of, even with more positive earning backdrop, we should expect continued volatility, because when we look back to the past two reporting season, the volatility has been really high. We have half of the company reported with share price movement more than 5%, and in fact, a third of those have a movement of more than 10%. That includes some of the well-known household names. So volatility is here to stay. Investors should prepare and embrace opportunity, because from that we see a lot of opportunity coming out. The market is less so moving on a macro basis. It's more a stock picker market as we are going into the reporting season now.
Thanks, Raymond. That's Raymond Chan there from Morgans. And as you mentioned, the market down 1%, 8,778. The market placing a 72% chance we'll see an interest rate rise tomorrow, but not everyone agrees. One of those is Phil O'Donohoe. He is the chief economist at Deutsche Bank, and I spoke with him. So Phil, a jump in inflation last week spooked many economists, including those at the big four banks, to predict there'll be a rate rise tomorrow. The money markets are expecting a 72% chance it'll happen too, but you don't think that this is necessarily the case. Why?
No, look, I'm not convinced, Ricardo. I think there is some good news in the direction of travel for underlying inflation. It is certainly the case that quarterly inflation in Q4 was a little bit stronger than the RBA were expecting. But when I look at the details, and we now have a monthly CPI, and when I look at those details for the month, we saw that the strength in Q4 was actually in the month of October. In November and in December, we saw a deceleration in underlying inflation. And in fact, by the time we got around to that month of December, and it certainly is only 1 month, but it is the latest month we have for the RBA ahead of their board decision, inflation was sitting at 0.23% for the month. If I annualise that, that's about 2.75%. That's within the 2-3% target band. Look, I think there is a case for the RBA to just wait and see, not rush with a rate hike in February, wait and see where this monthly CPI goes over the start of the early months of 2026.
So the argument, this discussion between whether these prices are temporary or more entrenched, what's your argument?
Yeah, look, I think it's temporary. I really think it's a temporary pickup. It certainly was pretty strong, surprisingly strong. Again, if I look at this monthly CPI, we saw a really strong print in July and then again in October. But again, you know, I just point to this deceleration we've seen in the last couple of months. And I look at an economy where, the unemployment rate has risen, where the pace of job growth has slowed. We certainly had some rate cuts last year, but it just does not feel to me like an economy where we're running consistently with inflation consistently above target. I think there is some sensible reasons to think we're going to see a little bit of a deceleration. And I think for that reason, I think the RBA shouldn't be rushing with a rate hike at its February meeting.
What about the theory that the RBA should be taking some sort of insurance policy just in case inflation is a little too hot?
Yeah, look, that's all well and good, but it comes with a very big cost for us here in Australia. We know that our household sector is probably one of the most interest rate sensitive household sectors anywhere in the world. Anybody with a mortgage knows that there is a direct link between your mortgage repayments and the cash rate. So, look, insurance sounds all very good and well, but when that comes at the potential cost of jobs, when that comes at the potential cost of significant impact on cash flows for households, I think the RBA needs to be a little bit more cautious. And not just raising rates on the off chance. We are the only non-Japan G10 bank where the market is even thinking about raising rates as soon as February. So we are really out on our own if we were to see a rate hike in February.
That's Phil O'Donohoe there from Deutsche Bank. And he wraps up the podcast for this Monday. Don't forget, if you enjoy it, give it a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Click subscribe, and I will see you on Wednesday.
This SBS on the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decisions. This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
Ready to make this summer a little more bilingual? Whether you're polishing your skills or looking to level up, SBS has podcasts to help you learn at your own pace. Check out Slow Spanish, Slow Japanese, or Slow Italian Fast Learning. Or try Easy French and Easy Croatian. Perfect for road trips, beach days, or lazy afternoons. Listen now on the SBS audio app or wherever you get your podcasts.